This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
We're back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan for your lunch break. Everybody loves a good lunch, Kevin.
Yeah,
absolutely. Are the Mavs getting the D from the refs is the question I want to know the answer to.
What does that mean?
Mike, you're probably – well, no.
They did steal the ball a couple times last night from the Mavericks.
I don't understand what's happening. I do understand what's happening, and I told y'all – I warned y'all about this the other day. Mark Cuban saying what he said is going to become a problem because – and I don't understand. We've seen it already. In his tenure as the owner of this team – he was so critical that it essentially cost the Mavericks championships, opportunities to get championships. Because, and Kevin, I go back to 2006. If you go back to that time, they may have been okay with Mark Cuban and the Mavericks sweeping the Heat if Mark Cuban was the type of owner they wanted him to be. But because the NBA came through and was like, we can't let this be a sweep, then that happens. And you contend that if Dirk had won that one, he would have won multiple.
No. Oh, yes.
Because at that point,
the confidence.
And because people would have wanted to jump on with him at that point. Okay. By the time he won, he was too old for people to be like, that's the guy I need to build with.
But even still, how difficult was it to get to that point simply because, and Dirk had to at some point say to Mark Cuban, hey, can you kind of shut up just a little bit? Because they're kind of getting mad. Because you remember the season? Mark Cuban grew his beard out. He pouted, but he never said anything. And the Mavericks won a championship.
Yeah, the tough thing about that is you don't 100% know. I'm sure that Dirk didn't 100% know that some of these BS calls are because of Mark Cuban. But because it was in the mind of Dirk Nowitzki, probably the mind of other players on the team, that they're just like, if you're quiet, let's just see what happens. Maybe we are still going to feel like we're not getting the benefit of the doubt on the close calls, and we feel like if we do this to them, it's a foul. If they do it to us, it's not a foul.
Yep.
Let's just see if you're quiet,
This will help. Yeah.
We've only had one game since the blow-up of Mark Cuban after the Atlanta Hawks loss, and we saw that it changed. I felt like last night, Luka shot the ball 25 times. Luka, I'm so happy about this. His ankle looked good last night, right? I was worried that it was going to be a 50-50 proposition if he played. He ended up playing, and he looked very healthy during the game. But 25 shots, 4 free throw attempts. And I don't know. This is where I just don't know. I don't know. Is that because Luka complained so much that these three refs were tired of it and sick of it, and they weren't going to call when his thumb almost got broken? That was a scary point late in the first quarter where I thought he might have broke his thumb when he went back to the training room. And then he got fouled a couple other times that were obvious calls, and they weren't called. And I was like, is that because Luka complains too much, or is that the now norm for the rest of this season for the Dallas Mavericks and Luka Doncic, because the refs are like, hey, you called all of us out. We are not going to call anything that we can get away with. We are going to get away with it now.
I still think it's probably Cuban because there's more of a track record there. And now that he's spoken up, maybe. And you know what? Maybe there's referees around the game that they've been there for a long time and they've been waiting to get back at him. They're like, man, I know other people screwed you over, but I didn't get my chance because you ran your mouth about me a lot.
And I know he feels like he has to protect Luka, you know, in that relationship of I'm going to go to bat for you no matter what. I'm always in your corner. I get that part of it. And I know sometimes he wants to win. And he feels like, he even said it, look, I really think we stand a good chance of winning this appeal with the Atlanta Hawks game. That's great. You won one game in the regular season.
Yeah.
Did you win the battle? Yeah. Did you win the war? Probably not, because what's going to ultimately happen is they're going to come back on you for it. Now, that's a very small piece of what this season is. The big piece, though, is the piece that that Saad has done. And Saad Youssef did the piece on Luka and Kristaps Porzingis. And, Mike, you went through every inch of this piece.
I did.
And it's very strong on the content of how Luka and Kristaps are finally coming together, Kevin.
And if you want another example from last night, just the combined stat line for the two, 54 points, 22 rebounds, 15 assists, and 3 blocks.
It's happening.
It's awesome.
They are becoming an unbelievable combination, and I know it's early to say that because in the article it talks about they've played in 36 games together out of the 59 because there's just been time where they have missed. Yeah. So it's only been 36 out of 59 games that they've been together. And those first 23 games were bad together, really bad together.
Which is where everyone started panicking, right?
But what happened is after those 23 games, Luka went out for 5 games with an injury.
Yep.
And that's when Porzingis, according to the article, Saad Youssef, and they use a G League coach in it, to kind of talk about more of their offense and why it is the most successful offense in the NBA. But to get back to the point, is that's when Porzingis gained his confidence. Because Porzingis, even though they weren't saying it, it was a lack of confidence somewhat because he was playing in a new system, asking him to do new things, hadn't been playing for 20 months. Now he's not the main guy. He's working off of a superstar. And all those things were causing problems for Porzingis. And then
do you view this as, not that you ever wanted Luka to get hurt, but in the grand scheme, it was a necessary evil
they're saying in the article, and I agree with it. Yes, the best thing that happened in the 2019-20 season is Luka has been hurt twice. Because in those times, that's when Porzingis has shined.
Yeah.
Got his confidence. Okay. And now we're seeing after having to play some games without Luka, using Porzingis as the main guy, he can still go out there and get you close to 30 points. He is now a really good rebounder. He is a good, he was a below average rebounder with the New York Knicks his whole career. And now he's an above average rebounder. And it doesn't talk about rebounding so much in the article, but it just talks about, it starts off of how bad they were together. And then Luka got hurt. And then Luka got hurt again. And through that, Porzingis gained his confidence. And now we're also seeing in the article, it talks about how Porzingis is saying, look, it's just taking time, but we're going to keep getting better and better. And the communication's there. And we want to be great together. And we're getting there. And it's going to keep getting better.
How important is that last part that he said, we're going to be great together?
Yeah.
When
you've watched the last 3 or 4 games of this, when they've been on the court together, so you take out the Atlanta game because they both didn't play. This is one of the best combinations in the NBA. For the first half of the season, the first 40 games, we could say Luka's one of the 5 best players in the NBA. And there can be arguments there, but 5 best offensive players, there's no argument. He's one of the 5 best offensive players in the game. He's in the MVP candidacy. But you couldn't say at all, nobody could say Porzingis and Luka is one of the best 1-2 combinations in the NBA. You said, no, they're not. He said Porzingis shined when Luka was out, and then Luka came back and he looked bad again, as in like not what we wanted to see from when Luka was out. It's only been recently that now you can start saying Porzingis and Luka. I think you can put them in the same as LeBron and Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Yes, are those guys better with a better record, with more experience? Yes, I'm not saying they're there yet, but I think now we can start having conversations when you look at the 1-2 combinations in the NBA that you really like. I think now we can start talking about Luka and Porzingis in that conversation.
Not health-wise, though, right? And that's your skepticism, right, Kevin, is Kristaps' health.
Yes.
Like everything revolves around, can he play a season with him?
100% about that. And just real quick.
Skill, because the skill exists.
Oh, well, the skill is there. But, we talked about it. The whole reason he was available is because, I know he'd burned a lot of bridges in New York, too. But the whole reason he was available is because they did not seem to believe long-term in his health. But I think and that's why I'm still kind of holding out, because, he did already miss some time with a knee. I know it was a different issue, but still, that makes me a little nervous. I'm curious, real quick, do you put Giannis and Middleton in there? Because Middleton's a damn good player, too.
Yes. Now, he's probably, Middleton's an all-star, not a superstar.
But he's as good as Kristaps.
Right. Well, in a way, yes. I think Porzingis can be way better than Middleton. Like, what Middleton's career has been and going to be, I believe Porzingis
can be better.
I'm going to say way better. And I'm not saying Middleton is very good. Don't get me wrong. But right now, would you for next year, and I know for long term you'd rather have Porzingis, but for next year, would you change out Porzingis for Middleton. If you're a Mavs fan, would you say I'd rather have Middleton next year than Porzingis because I think Middleton's better, going to be better next year than Porzingis?
Huh. I'd, no,
look at that A&M brain working right
now. I know. I think I would because I would feel confident he'd be out there every game.
Okay.
Kristaps has never played a full season.
All right.
But he stayed healthy. Middleton does.
All right. What about the playoffs, though?
This playoffs?
No, next year's playoffs.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
As much as I love the regular season and seeding and everything, the legacy of Luka is only going to rely now on what he does in the playoffs. So, who gives me a better chance in the playoffs?
But
I would say let Porzingis play in these 4 to 6 games he's going to get in the playoffs because that I think is going to mean a lot to Porzingis playing next year in the playoffs. I know it sounds weird, but because these guys have never played in a playoff game ever. That we're going to need to see them play on that stage to get a better idea. Because remember when it first happened for Dirk? Dirk was horrible in Utah the first 2 games in 2001. They were blown out. Everybody looked horrible. And then they came back to Dallas and started showing what we saw in the 2000-2001 season. And then we got to Utah, and Dirk's in bad foul trouble. They look horrible again at halftime. And then Dirk shines, and obviously Finley makes the great pass to Calvin Booth, and then they go on, they kind of get rolled up by San Antonio, but then there are moments in the San Antonio series where Dirk looks like a superstar, and we're like, okay, Dirk's on his way to superstar status. We saw it somewhat in the regular season, now we know it from what we just saw him do against Malone and Stockton and what he just did against Duncan, and if we get that from Porzingis in his playoff run this year where we see 2 or 3 games where he looks dominant in the playoffs, then I want Porzingis for sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair. And based on current trajectory, if they continue to gel at this rate, then obviously I'll go with the person that I know is going to work with Luka as opposed to the person that I don't know in Middleton.
Well, you also don't like Luka, so you're trying. You hope
that is not true.
This is a little bit contradictory in the article, but this is something that I have noticed. This was from Tim McMahon's article. I'm taking this for this. Tim McMahon's not in this article, but when he talked about the Mavericks don't believe in posting up and all that stuff, that hasn't been true recently. And here is why. This is, and I'm sorry, I'm probably going to say his last name wrong. Galanopoulos is the article where he is a G League coach for Frisco.
Okay.
And he's breaking down the offense. So he's part of the Mavericks overall staff. Not the Dallas Mavericks staff, but he's working G League. And he says,
the J-Lo movie?
They like to post up Luka because he doesn't take these fadeaway shots and avoid contact. Luka posts up to embrace contact to get fouled because he's got a mismatch. And it talks about the posting up now happening in the Mavericks system. And it's really to get 3-point looks, to hit cutters. Porzingis is now posting up. It's not so much for those guys to score off of their post-up mid-range game, but they have added the post-up in their game. They're posting up. It says the Mavericks registered 10 post-up plays leading to scoring attempts against the Kings' small lineup. So if a team wants to go small on the Mavs, and let's just say you haven't been paying a lot of attention to, but you heard the Tim McMahon article that the Mavericks don't believe in posting up, and that was pretty much confirmed by Rick Carlisle in a post-game interview.
Yes, and I remember that.
They do like posting up in this article, and they are posting up. If you put a little guy on Porzingis because he has more confidence in his game, passing out of the post, taking the ball to the rack out of the post, and you put a little guy on Luka, they actually do run post-up stuff now. And it's part of their offense is posting up.
Okay, I'm interested in a name that I saw pop up here on the Fantex a couple of times, and we've talked so much about Bradley Beal. I hadn't even really considered this person, and I think they're out of contract. Would adding DeMar DeRozan do anything for you in terms of continuing to push the contender status? Because the whole reason I'm curious about this is, look, if they're starting to gel, you see this thing moving towards the top. But they still need something else, I would say.
Pretty much for nothing, I would add DeMar DeRozan. If in the offseason you can get him for very little to nothing, I would do it.
No love for DeMar DeRozan. I know he can't shoot the three,
That's my problem is I want the ball in Luka's hands a lot. I don't mind DeMar DeRozan. We saw what he can do, especially driving to the basket, his mid-range game. And those are valuable. Kawhi Leonard just won a championship, and his best trait is his mid-range game. And he does other things. He takes the ball to the basket, finishes around the basket. He can shoot the three. We obviously saw that in the All-Star game. But the mid-range game isn't totally dead. If you are just awesome at executing it in Kawhi Leonard's way, or DeMar DeRozan, what we saw last night, I don't mind having you. But what is tough, when you go through this article, it's on The Athletic from Saad Youssef, they go through and they show some offensive sets that get Tim Hardaway and Dorian Finney-Smith and other guys, whether it's wide open threes or wide open layups. If you have a guy like DeMar DeRozan on the court and you give him the ball where some of these guys are getting the ball, it could make it more difficult for him to score in the Maverick system than in the Spurs system, because Luka would be like, here's your pass, shoot it. I've collapsed the defense. And if you want to recollapse the defense, they're already all in the paint. Yeah, I brought them all here.
Yeah.
And so he has to make, or he has to at least take it and make it, really.
And he probably will not. Now, this might be something for a future segment. What do you think Kristaps' ceiling is in the league in this system? Like, could he be top 15, top 10? Maybe we'll pick that up another day.
Yeah, you said the correct number there.
Okay.